Chapter 13. The Bowl of the Winds. Avienda would have sat on the floor, but three other women occupying the boat's small room left not quite enough space, so she had to be content with folding her legs atop one of the carved wooden benches built against the walls. That way it was not so much like sitting in a chair. At least the door was shut, and there were no windows, only fanciful carved scrollwork piercing the walls near the ceiling. She could not see the water outside, but the piercings let in the smell of salt and the slap of waves against the hull and the splash of the oars. Even the shrill, hollow cries of some sort of birds shouted of vast expanses of water. She had seen men die for a pool they might have stepped across, but this water was bitter beyond belief. Reading of it was not at all the same as tasting it. And the river had been at least half a mile wide where they boarded this boat with its two oddly leering oarsmen. Half a mile of water, and not a drop fit for drinking. Who could imagine useless water? The motion of the boat had changed to a rocking back and forth. Were they out of the river yet? Into what was called the bay? That was wider still, far wider, so Elaine said. Avienda locked her hands on her knees and tried desperately to think of anything else. If the others saw her fear, the shame would follow her to the end of her days. The worst of it was she had suggested this, after hearing Elaine and Nynaeve talk of the sea folk. How could she have known what it would be like? The blue silk of her dress felt incredibly smooth, and she latched on to that. She was barely used to skirts at all. She still yearned for the cut-in sore the wise ones had made her burn when she began training with them, and here she wore a silk dress, of which she now owned four, and silk stockings instead of stout wool, and a silk shift that made her aware of her skin in a way she never had been before. She could not deny the beauty of the dress, no matter how odd it was to find herself wearing such things, but silk was precious and rare. A woman might have a scarf of silk, to be worn on feast days and envied by others. Few women had two. It was different among these wetlanders, though. Not everyone wore silk, yet sometimes it seemed to her every second person did. Great bolts and even bales of it came by ship from the lands beyond the threefold land. By ship. On the ocean. Water stretching to the horizon, with many places where, if she understood correctly, you could not see land at all. She came close to shivering at the impossible thought. None of the others looked as if they wished to talk. Elaine absently twisted the great serpent ring on her right hand and peered at something not to be seen inside the four walls. These worries often overtook her. Two duties confronted her, and if one lay nearer her heart, she had chosen the one she considered more important, more honorable. It was her right and duty to become the chief, the queen of Andor, but she had chosen to continue hunting. In a way, however important their search, that was like putting something before clan or society, yet Avienda felt pride. Elaine's view of honor was as peculiar at times as the notion of a woman being a chief, or her becoming chief just because her mother had been, but she followed it admirably. Birgitta, in the wide red trousers and short yellow coat Avienda envied, sat toying with her waist-long braid, lost in thought as well, or maybe sharing part of Elaine's worries. She was Elaine's first warder, which upset the Aes Sedai back in the Tarasin Palace no end, though it did not seem to bother their warders. Wetlander customs were so curious they hardly bore thinking about. If Elaine and Birgitta seemed to deflect any thought of talk, Nynaeve Almira, directly opposite Avienda by the door, rebuffed it firmly. Nynaeve. Not Nynaeve Almira. Wetlanders like to be called by only half their names, and Avienda was trying to remember, however much it felt like using a honey name. Randall Thor was the only lover she had ever had, and she did not think even of him so intimately. But she had to learn their ways, if she was to wed one of them. Nynaeve's deep brown eyes stared through her. Her knuckles were white on a thick braid as dark as Birgitta's was golden, and her face had gone beyond pale to a faint green. From time to time she emitted a tiny, muted groan. She did not usually sweat. She and Elaine had taught Avienda the trick. Nynaeve was a puzzle. Brave to the point of madness sometimes, she moaned over her supposed cowardice, and here she displayed her shame for all to see without a care. How could the motion disturb her so when all that water did not? Water again. Avienda shut her eyes to avoid seeing Nynaeve's face, but that only made the sounds of the birds and the lapping water fill her head. "I have been thinking," Elaine said suddenly, then paused. "Are you all right, Avienda? You..." Avienda's cheeks reddened, but at least Elaine did not say aloud that she had jumped like a rabbit at the sound of her voice. Elaine seemed to realize how close she had come to revealing Avienda's dishonor. Color flushed her own cheeks as she continued. "I was thinking about Nicola and Arena, about what Egwene told us last night. You don't suppose they can cause her any trouble, do you? What is she to do?"
"Rid herself of them," Avienda said, drawing a thumb across her neck.
The relief of speaking, of hearing voices, was so great that she almost gasped. Elaine appeared shocked. She was remarkably soft-hearted at times.
"It might be for the best," Birgitta said.
She had revealed no more name than that. Avienda thought her a woman with secrets.
"Arena could have made something of herself with time, but..."
"Don't look at me that way, Elaine, and stop going all prim and indignant in your head." Birgitta often slipped back and forth between the warder who obeyed and the older first sister who instructed whether or not you wished to learn. Right then, waving an admonishing finger, she was the first sister.
"You two wouldn't have been warned to stay away if it was a difficulty the Ammerlin could solve by having them set to work with the laundresses or the like."
Elaine gave a sharp sniff in the face of what she could not deny, and adjusted her green silk skirts where they were drawn up in front to expose layers of blue and white petticoats. She was wearing the local fashion, complete with creamy lace at her wrists and around her neck, a gift from Tylin Quintara, as was the close-fitting necklace of woven gold. Avienda did not approve. The upper half of the dress, the bodice, fitted as snugly as that necklace, and a missing narrow oval of cloth revealed the inner slopes of her breasts. Walking about where all could see was not the same as the sweat tents. People in the streets of the city were not Guy Shane. Her own dress had a high neck that brushed her chin with lace and no parts of it missing. "Besides," Birgitta went on, "I would think Marigan would worry you more. She frightens me spitless." That name got through to Nynaeve, as well it might. Her groaning ceased, and she sat up straight. "If she comes after us, we will just settle for her again. We'll... Drawing breath, she stared at them pointedly as if they were arguing with her. What she said in a faint voice was, "Do you think she will?" "Fretting will do no good," Elaine told her, much more calmly than Avienda could have managed, if she thought one of the Shadow Souls had marked her out. "We will just have to do as Egwene said and be careful." Nynaeve muttered something inaudible, which was probably just as well. Silence descended again, Elaine settling to a browner study than before, Birgitta propping her chin on one hand as she frowned at nothing. Nynaeve kept right on grumbling under her breath, but she had both hands pressed to her middle now, and from time to time she paused to swallow. The splashing of water seemed louder than ever, and the cries of the birds.
"I have been thinking too, near sister."
She and Elaine had not reached the point of adopting each other as first sisters yet, but she was sure they would now. Already they brushed each other's hair, and every night in the dark shared another secret never told to anyone else. This Min woman, though, that was for later, when they were alone.
"About what?" Elaine asked absently.
"Our search. We prepare for success, but we are as far away as when we began. Does it make sense not to use every weapon at hand? Matt Cawthon is Taviran, yet we work to avoid him. Why not take him with us? With him we might find the bowl at last."
"Matt?" Nynaeve exclaimed incredulously.
"As well stuff your shift full of nettles. I would not endure the man if he had the bowl in his coat pocket."
"Oh, do be quiet, Nynaeve," Elaine murmured, without any heat. She shook her head wonderingly, taking no notice of the other's sudden glower. Prickly only began to describe Nynaeve, but they were all used to her ways. Why didn't I think of that? It's so obvious. Maybe, Birgitta murmured dryly. You had Matt the Scoundrel set so hard in your mind you couldn't see he had any use. Elaine gave her a cool stare, chin raised, then abruptly grimaced and nodded reluctantly. She did not accept criticism easily. No, Nynaeve said in a voice that somehow managed to be sharp and weak at the same time. The sickly cast of her face had deepened, but it no longer seemed caused by the boat's heaving. You cannot possibly mean it. Elaine, you know what a torment he can be, how stubborn he is. He'll insist on bringing those soldiers of his like a feast day parade. Try finding anything in the Rahad with soldiers at your shoulder. Just try. Inside 2 steps he'll try to take charge, flaunting that Tarangreal at us. He's 1,000 times worse than Van Deen or Adelius, or even Merilila. The way he behaves, you would think we'd walk into a bear's den just to see the bear. Birgitta made a noise in her throat that might have been amusement, and received a darted glare. She returned such a look of bland innocence that Nynaeve began to sound as if she were choking. Elaine was more soothing. She probably would try to make peace in a water feud. He is Tavirin, Nynaeve. He alters the pattern, alters chance, just being there. I'm ready to admit we need luck, and a Tavirin is more than luck. Besides, we can snare 2 birds at once. We should not have been letting him run loose all this time, no matter how busy we were. That's done no one any good, him least of all. He needs to be made fit for decent company. We will put him on a short rein from the start. Nynaeve smoothed her skirts with considerable vigor. She claimed to have no more interest in dresses than Avienda, in what they looked like anyway. She was always muttering about good plain wool being fine enough for anybody, yet her own blue dress was slashed with yellow on the skirts and sleeves, and she herself had chosen its design. Every stitch she owned was silk or embroidered or both, all cut with what Avienda had learned to recognize as fine care. For once Nynaeve appeared to understand she would not get her way. Sometimes she threw amazing tantrums until she did. Not that she would admit that was what they were. The glower faded to a grumpy sulk. Who will ask him? Whoever does, he will make her beg. You know he will. I'd sooner marry him. Elaine hesitated, then said firmly, Birgitta will, and she won't beg. She will tell him. Most men will do as you say if you use a firm, confident voice. Nynaeve looked doubtful, and Birgitta jerked erect on her bench, startled for the first time Avienda had ever seen. With anyone else, Avienda might have said she looked a little afraid, too. Birgitta would have done very well as far Dar Ais Mai for a wetlander. She had remarkable skill with a bow. You are the clear choice, Birgitta, Elaine went on quickly. Nynaeve and I are Aes Sedai, and Avienda might as well be. We cannot possibly do it, not and maintain proper dignity, not with him. You know what he is like. What had happened to all that talk of a firm, confident voice? Not that Avienda had ever noticed that working for anyone except Cyrillia. It surely had not so far on Matt Cawthon that she had seen. Birgitta, he can't have recognized you. If he had, he would have said something by now. Whatever that meant, Birgitta leaned back against the wall and laced her fingers over her stomach. I should have known you'd get back at me ever since I said it was a good thing your bottom wasn't any... She stopped, and a faint, satisfied smile appeared on her lips. Nothing changed in Elaine's expression, but plainly Birgitta thought she had gained a measure of revenge. It must have been something felt through the warder bond. How Elaine's bottom entered into anything, though, Avienda could not puzzle out. Wetlanders were so odd at times. Birgitta continued, still wearing that smile. What I don't understand is why he starts chafing as soon as he sees you two. It can't be that you snagged him off here. Egwene was as deep in that as you, but I saw him treat her with more respect than most of the sisters do. Besides the times I've glimpsed him coming out of the wandering woman, he looked to be enjoying himself.
Her smile became a grin that made Elaine sniff disapprovingly.
That is one thing we need to change. A decent woman cannot be in the room with him. Oh, do wipe that smirk off your face, Brigitta. I vow you are as bad as he sometimes.
The man was born just to be a trial, Nynaeve muttered sourly.
Suddenly, Avienda was forcibly reminded that she was on a boat, as everything lurched, swaying and swinging around to a halt. Rising and straightening dresses, they gathered the light cloaks they had brought. She did not don hers. The sunlight here was not so bright that she needed the hood to keep it from her eyes. Birgitta only draped hers over one shoulder and pushed open the door, following up the three steps after Nynaeve had rushed past her, with a hand clapped over her mouth. Elaine paused to tie her cloak ribbons and arrange the hood around her face, red-gold curls peeking out all around.
"You did not say much, near sister."
"I said what I had to say. The decision was yours."
"The key thought was yours, though. Sometimes I think the rest of us are turning into half-wits."
"Well."
Half turning to the steps, not quite looking at her, Elaine paused.
"Distances bother me sometimes, over water. I think I will look only at the ship, myself, nothing else."
Avienda nodded. Her near sister had a fine delicacy, and they went up. On the deck, Nynaeve was just shaking off Brigitta's offer of help and pushing herself up from the railing. The two oarsmen looked on in amusement as she wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. Shirtless fellows with a brass hoop in each ear, they must have had frequent use for the curved daggers shoved behind their sashes. Most of their attention went to working their pairs of long sweeps, though, walking back and forth on the deck to hold the heaving boat in place near a ship that almost took Avienda's breath with its size, looming above their suddenly very tiny vessel, its three great masts reaching taller than most trees she had seen even here in the wetlands. They had chosen it because it was the largest of the hundreds of seafolk ships anchored in the bay. On a ship that big, surely it must be possible to forget all the surrounding water, except... Elaine had not really acknowledged her shame, and if she had, a near sister could know your deepest humiliation without it mattering, but Amis said she had too much pride. She made herself turn and look away from the boat. She had never seen so much water in her life. Not if every drop seen before had been gathered in one place, all of it rolling gray-green and here and there frothing white. Her eyes darted, trying to avoid taking it in. Even the sky seemed larger here, immense, with a liquid gold sun crawling up from the east. A gusting wind blew, somewhat cooler than on the land, and never failing entirely. Clouds of birds flurried in the air, gray and white and sometimes splotched with black, giving those shrill cries. One, all black except for its head, skimmed along the surface with its long lower beak slicing through the water, and a slanted line of ungainly brown birds, pelicans Elaine had named them, suddenly folded their wings one by one and plummeted with great splashes, bobbing back to the top, where they floated, tilting up beaks of incredible size. There were ships everywhere, many almost as large as the one behind her, not all belonging to the Atha An Mier, and smaller vessels with one or two masts moving under triangular sails. Smaller ships still, mastless like the boat she was on, with a high sharp peak at the front and a low flat house at the back, spidered across the water on oars, one pair or two, or sometimes three. One long narrow boat that must have had 20 to a side looked like 100 legs skittering along. And there was land. Maybe 7 or 8 miles distant, sunlight gleamed off the white-plastered buildings of the city. 7 or 8 miles of water. Swallowing, she turned back more swiftly than she had turned away. She thought her cheeks must be greener than Nynaeve's had been. Elaine was watching her, trying to keep a smooth face, but wetlanders showed their emotions so plainly her concern was visible.
"I am a fool, Elaine."
Even with her, using no more of her name made Avienda feel uneasy. When they were first sisters,
When they were sister wives, it would be easier. A wise woman listens to wise advice.
"You are braver than I will ever be," Elaine replied, quite seriously.
She was another who kept denying that she had any courage. Maybe that was also a Wetlander custom? No. Avienda had heard Wetlanders speak of their own bravery. These Ebudari, for one, seemed unable to utter three words without boasting. Elaine drew a deep breath, steeling herself.
"Tonight we will talk about Rand."
Avienda nodded, but she did not see how that followed from talk of courage. How could sister wives manage a husband if they did not talk of him in detail? That was what the older women told her anyway, and the wise ones. They were not always so forthcoming, of course. When she complained to Amice and Bear that she must be ill because she felt as though Randall Thor was carrying some part of her around with him, they had fallen down laughing. "You will learn," they cackled at her, and, "You would have learned sooner had you grown up in skirts." As if she had ever wanted any life but that of a maiden running with her spear sisters. Maybe Elaine felt something of the same emptiness. Speaking of him did seem to make the hollowness grow, even while filling it. For some time she had been aware of voices rising, and now she heard the words. "You ear-ringed buffoon!" Nynaeve was shaking her fist at a very dark man peering down at her from over the tall side of the ship. He looked calm, but then he could not see the glow of Sidar surrounding her. "We are not after the gift of passage, so it doesn't matter whether you refuse it to Aes Sedai. You let down a ladder this instant!" The men at the oars were missing their grins. Apparently they had failed to see the serpent rings back at the stone landing, and they did not look pleased to learn they had Aes Sedai aboard.
"Oh, dear," Elaine sighed. "I must retrieve this, Avienda, or we've wasted the morning just so she could lose her breakfast porridge."
Gliding across the deck, Avienda was proud of knowing the proper names for things on boats, Elaine addressed the man up on the ship.
"I am Elaine Trekand, daughter heir of Andor and Aes Sedai of the Green Aja. My companion is quite truthful. We do not seek the gift of passage, but we must speak with your windfinder on a matter of urgency. Tell her we know of the weaving of winds. Tell her we know of windfinders."
The man above frowned down at her, then abruptly vanished without a word. "The woman will probably think you mean to blab her secrets," Nynaeve muttered, jerking her cloak into place. She tied the ribbons fiercely. "You know how afraid they are that Aes Sedai will haul them all off to the tower, if it's known most can channel. Only a ninny thinks she can threaten people, Elaine, and still get anywhere." Avienda burst out laughing. By the startled look Nynaeve gave her, she did not see the joke she had made on herself. Elaine's lips quivered, though, however she tried to hold them. You could never be sure about Wetlander humor. They found strange things funny and missed the best. Whether or not the Windfinder felt threatened, by the time Elaine had paid the boatmen and cautioned them to wait for their return, with Nynaeve grumbling over the amount and telling them she would box their ears if they left, and how she was to manage that nearly set Avienda laughing again, by the time all that was done, it seemed a decision had been reached to allow them on. No ladder was lowered, but instead a flat piece of wood, the two ropes it hung from becoming one and running up to a thick pole swung out over the side from one of the masts. Nynaeve took her place sitting on the board with dire warnings for the boatmen if they even thought of trying to look up her skirts, and Elaine blushed and held hers tightly around her legs, hunched over so she appeared ready to fall off head first as she wobbled into the air and disappeared from sight onto the ship. One of the fellows looked upward anyway, until Birgitta struck him on the nose with her fist. They certainly did not watch her ascent. Avienda's belt knife was small, with a blade not half a foot long, but the oarsmen frowned worriedly when she drew it. Her arm went back, and they fell sprawling to the deck as the knife whirled over their heads to sink with a solid thunk into the thick wooden post at the front of the boat. Looping the cloak over her arms like a shawl, she hoisted her skirts well above her knees so she could climb over the oars and retrieve her blade, then took her place on the dangling board. She did not replace the knife in its sheath.
For some reason, the two men exchanged confused looks, but they kept their eyes down as she was lifted up. Perhaps she was beginning to get a feel for Wetlander customs. Settling onto the great ship's deck, she gaped, almost forgetting to climb off the narrow seat. She had read of the Atha An Mier, but reading and seeing was as different as reading of salt water and tasting it. They were all dark, for one thing, much darker than the Ebu Dari, even darker than most Tyrans, with straight black hair and black eyes and tattooed hands. Bare-chested, barefoot men with bright narrow sashes holding up baggy breeches of some dark cloth that had an oily look to it, and women in blouses as brilliantly colored as their sashes, all with a sway to their movements, gliding gracefully with the rocking of the ship. Seafolk women had very strange customs when it came to men, according to what she had read, dancing with no more than a single scarf for covering and worse, but it was the earrings that made her stare. Most had three or four, often with polished stones, and several actually had a small ring in one side of their noses. The men did, too, the earrings at least, and just as many heavy golden silver chains around their necks. Men! Some Wetlander men wore rings in their ears, true, most Ebu Dari men seemed to, but so many! And necklaces! Wetlanders did have strange ways. The sea folk never left their ships, never, so she had read, and supposedly they ate their dead. She had not been quite able to credit that, but if the men wore necklaces, who could say what else they did? The woman who came to meet them wore breeches and blouse and sash like the others, but hers were of brocaded yellow silk, the sash knotted intricately with ends trailing to her knee, and one of her necklaces bore a small golden box of intricate piercework. A sweetly musky scent surrounded her. Gray streaked her hair heavily, and she had a grave face. Five small, fat golden rings decorated each of her ears, and a fine chain connected one to a similar ring in her nose. Tiny medallions of polished gold dangling from the chain flashed in the sunlight as she studied them. Avienda pulled her hand down from her own nose to wear that chain, always tugging, and barely managed to suppress a laugh. Wetlander customs were odd beyond belief, and surely no one deserved the name better than the sea folk. "I am Malin Din Toral Breaking Wave," the woman said, "wave mistress of Clan Somarin and sail mistress of Windrunner." A wave mistress was important, like a clan chief, yet she seemed at a loss, looking from one face to the next, until her eye fell on the great serpent rings Elaine and Nynaeve wore, and then she exhaled in resignation. "If it pleases you to come with me, Aes Sedai," she said to Nynaeve. The back of the ship was raised, and she led the way inside that by a door, then down a hallway to a large room, a cabin, with a low ceiling. Avienda doubted Randall Thor would have been able to stand upright beneath one of the thick beams. Except for a few lacquered chests, everything seemed to have been built in place, cabinets along the walls, even the long table that ran half the length of the room, and the armchairs that surrounded it. It was difficult to think of something the size of this ship being made of wood, and even after all her time in the wetlands, the sight of all that polished wood nearly made her gasp. It glowed almost as much as the gilded lamps, hanging unlit in some sort of cage, so they remained upright as the ship moved with the waves. In truth, the ship hardly seemed to move at all, at least in comparison with the boat they had been on, but unfortunately the back of the cabin, of the ship, was a line of windows with the painted and gilded shutters standing open, giving a splendid view of the bay. Worse, there was no land in sight out those windows. No land at all! Her throat seized. She could not have spoken. She could not have screamed, although that was what she wanted to do. Those windows and what they showed, what they did not show, had caught her eyes so quickly that it took her a moment to realize people were there already. A fine thing. Had they wished, they could have killed her before she knew. Not that they showed any sign of hostility, but you could never be too careful with Wetlanders. A spindly old man with deep-set eyes was sitting at his ease atop one of the chests. What little hair remained to him was white, and his dark face had a kindly look,
though a full dozen earrings altogether and a number of thick gold chains around his neck gave his expression a strange twist in her eyes. Like the men above, he was barefoot and bare-chested, but his breeches were a dark blue silk, and his long sash a bright red. An ivory-hilted sword was thrust through that sash, she noted with disdain, as well as two curved daggers to match. The slender, handsome woman, with her arms folded and a grimly foreboding frown, was more worthy of notice. She wore only four earrings in each ear, and fewer medallions on her chain than Malin Din Toral, and her clothing was all in reddish-yellow silk. She could channel, Avienda knew that, this close. She must be the woman they had come for, the Windfinder. And yet it was another who held Avienda's eye, and for that matter Elaine's and Nynaeve's and Birgitta's. The woman who had looked up from an unrolled map on the table might have been as old as the man by her white hair. Short, no taller than Nynaeve, she looked like someone who had once been stocky and was beginning to go stout, but her jaw thrust forward like a hammer, and her black eyes spoke of intelligence and power. Not the one power, just that of someone who said go and knew that people would go, yet she had it strongly. Her breeches were brocaded green silk, her blouse blue, and her sash red like the man's. The stout bladed knife in a gilded sheath tucked behind that sash had a round pommel covered with red and green stones. Firedrops and emeralds, Avienda thought. Twice as many medallions hung from her nose chain as from Malin Din Toral's, and another thinner gold chain connected the six rings in each of her ears. Avienda barely kept her hand from going to her own nose again. Without a word, the white-haired woman came to stand in front of Nynaeve, rudely examining her from head to toe, frowning in particular at Nynaeve's face and the great serpent ring on her right hand. She took no time about it, and with a grunt moved on from her ruffled object of study to give Elaine the same quick, intense scrutiny, and then Birgitta. At last she spoke.
"You are not an Aes Sedai."
Her voice sounded like rocks tumbling. "By the Nine Winds and Stormbringer's Beard, I am not," Birgitta replied. Sometimes she said things even Elaine and Nynaeve seemed not to understand, but the white-haired woman jumped as if she had been goosed and stared a long moment before turning to frown up at Avienda.
"You are not Aes Sedai either," she grated after the same examination.
Avienda drew herself to her full height, feeling as though the woman had rummaged through her garments, and twirled her about to look at her better.
"I am Avienda, of the Nine Valleys Sept of the Tardad Aiel."
The woman gave twice the start she had for Birgitta, black eyes going wide.
"You are not garbed as I expected, girl," was all she said, though,
and strode back to the far end of the table, where she planted her fists on her hips and studied them all again, much as she might have some strange animal she had never seen before.
"I am Nesta Din Rhea's Two Moons," she said at last, "mistress of the ships to the Athaan Mir. How do you know what you know?"
Nynaeve had been working on a scowl since the woman first looked at her, and now she snapped,
"Aes Sedai know what they know, and we expect more in the way of manners than I've seen so far. I certainly saw more the last time I was on a sea folk ship. Maybe we should find another, where the people don't all have sore teeth."
Nesta Din Rhea's face grew darker, but Elaine, of course, stepped into the breach, removing her cloak and laying it over the edge of the table.
"The light illumine you and your vessels, shipmistress, and send the winds to speed you all."
Her curtsy was moderately deep. Avienda had become a judge of these things. For all she thought it looked the most awkward thing any woman could ever do.
"Forgive us if there have been words in haste. We mean no disrespect to one who is as a queen to the Athaan Mir."
That with a speaking look for Nynaeve. Nynaeve only shrugged, though. Elaine introduced herself again and the rest of them to strange reactions. That Elaine was daughter heir produced none, though that was a high position among the wetlanders, and that she was Green Aja and Nynaeve Yellow received sniffs from Nesta Din Rhea's and sharp looks from the spindly old man.
Elaine blinked, taken aback, but she went on smoothly.
"We have come for two reasons. The lesser is to ask how you mean to aid the dragon reborn, who, according to the Jendai prophecy you call the Koromor. The greater is to request the help of this vessel's windfinder, whose name," she added gently, "I regret I do not yet know."
The slender woman who could channel reddened.
"I am Doriel Din Iron Longfeather, Aes Sedai. I may help if it pleases the light."
Malin Din Toral looked abashed, too. "The welcome of my ship to you," she murmured, "and the grace of the light be upon you until you leave his decks."
Not so Nesta Din Riaz. "The bargain is with the Koromor," she said in a hard voice and made a sharp cutting gesture. "The shorebound have no part of it, except where they tell of his coming. You, girl, Nynaeve, what ship gave you the gift of passage? Who was his windfinder?"
"I can't recall."
Nynaeve's airy tone was at odds with the stony smile she wore. She had a death grip on her braid, too, but at least she had not embraced Sidar again.
"And I am Nynaeve Sedai. Nynaeve Aes Sedai, not girl."
Putting her hands flat on the table, Nesta Din Riaz directed a stare at her that reminded Avienda of Cerulea.
"Perhaps you are, but I will know who revealed what should not have been revealed. She has lessons of silence to learn."
"A split sail is split, Nesta,"
the old man said suddenly, in a deep voice much stronger than his bony limbs suggested. Avienda had taken him for a guard, but his tone was that of an equal.
"It might be well to ask what aid Aes Sedai would have of us, in days when the Koromor has come, and the seas rage in endless storms, and the doom of the prophecy sails the oceans. If they are Aes Sedai?"
That with a raised eyebrow to the windfinder. She answered quietly in a respectful voice.
"Three can channel, including her," she pointed at Avienda. "I have never met anyone so strong as they. They must be. Who else would dare wear the ring?"
Waving her to silence, Nesta Din Riaz turned that same iron gaze on the man.
"Aes Sedai never ask aid, Barok," she growled. "Aes Sedai never ask anything."
He met her gaze mildly, but after a moment she sighed as though he had stared her down. The eyes she aimed at Elaine were no whit softer, though.
"What would you have of us?" she hesitated. "Daughter heir of Andor?" Even that sounded skeptical.
Nynaeve gathered herself, ready to launch into an attack. Avienda had had to listen to more than one tirade sparked by the Aes Sedai back in the Tarasin Palace, and their habit of forgetting that she and Elaine were Aes Sedai too. Someone not even Aes Sedai denying it might bring the shedding of blood. Nynaeve gathered herself up and opened her mouth, and Elaine silenced her with a touch on the arm and a whisper too low for Avienda to hear. Nynaeve's face was still crimson, and she looked about to pull her braid out slowly by the roots, yet she held her tongue. Maybe Elaine could make peace in a water feud. Of course, Elaine could not be pleased when not only her right to be called Aes Sedai, but her right to the title of daughter heir was doubted so openly. Most would have thought her quite calm, but Avienda knew the signs. The raised chin spoke of anger. Add eyes open as wide as they would go, and Elaine was a torch to overwhelm Nynaeve's ember. Besides, Birgitta was on her toes, face like stone and eyes like fire. She did not usually mirror Elaine's emotions, except when they were very strong. Wrapping her fingers around the hilt of her belt knife, Avienda readied herself to embrace Sidar. She would kill the windfinder first. The woman was not weak in the power, and she would be dangerous. They could find others with so many ships about.
"We seek a Turangrial."
Except that her tone was cool, anyone who did not know her would think Elaine was absolutely serene. She faced Nesta Din Riaz, but she addressed everyone, perhaps especially the windfinder.
"With it we believe we can remedy the weather. It must trouble you as much as it does the land. Barok spoke of endless storms. You must be able to see the Dark One's touch, the Father of Storms' touch, on the sea,
just as we do on the land. With this Tarangrial we can change that, but we cannot do it alone. It will require many women working together, perhaps a full circle of 13. We think those women should include windfinders. No one else knows so much of weather, not any Aes Sedai living. That is the aid we ask." Dead silence met her speech until Doriel Din Iron said carefully, "This Tarangrial, Aes Sedai, what is it called? How does it look?" "It has no name that I know," Elaine told her. "It is a thick crystal bowl, shallow but something over 2 feet across, and worked inside with clouds. When it is channeled into, the clouds move." "The bowl of the winds!" the windfinder broke in excitedly, stepping toward Elaine as if she did not realize it. "They have the bowl of the winds!" "You truly have it?" The wave mistress's eyes were fixed on Elaine eagerly, and she also took an involuntary step. "We are looking for it," Elaine said, "but we know it is in Ebudar. If it is the same..."
"It must be,"
Malin Din Toral exclaimed. "By your description, it must." "The bowl of the winds," Doriel Din Iron breathed. "To think it would be found again after 2,000 years here. It must be the Koramor. He must have..."
Nesta Din Rhea's hands slapped together loudly. "Do I see a wave mistress and her wind finder? Or 2 deck girls at their first shipmeet?"
Malin Din Toral's cheeks reddened with a proud anger, and she bent her head stiffly, pride in that as well. Twice as flushed, Doriel Din Iron bowed, touching fingertips to forehead, lips, and heart. The shipmistress frowned at them a moment before going on.
"Barok, summon the other wave mistresses who hold this port, and the first 12 as well, with their windfinders, and let them know you will hoist them by their toes in their own rigging if they do not hurry."
As he rose, she added,
"Oh, and have tea sent down. Working out the terms of this bargain will be thirsty."
The old man nodded. That he might dangle wave mistresses by their toes and that he must send tea were accepted equally. Eyeing Avienda and the others, he sauntered out with that rolling walk. She changed her opinion when she saw his eyes close up. It might have been a fatal mistake to kill the windfinder first. Someone must have been awaiting orders of the sort, because Barok was only gone moments before a slim, pretty young man with a single thin ring in each ear entered carrying a wooden tray that bore a square blue-glazed teapot with a golden handle and large blue cups of thick pottery. Nesta Din Rhea's waved him out.
"He will spread enough tales as it is without hearing what he should not," she said when he was gone,
and directed Birgitta to pour, which she did, to Avienda's surprise, and maybe her own. The shipmistress settled Elaine and Nynaeve in chairs at one end of the table, apparently intent on beginning her bargaining. Avienda refused a chair at the other end of the table, but Birgitta took one, swinging the arm out, then latching it back when she was seated. The wave mistress and the windfinder were excluded from that discussion, too, if discussion it could be called. The words were too low to hear, but Nesta Din Rhea's emphasized everything she said with a finger driven like a spear. Elaine had her chin so high she seemed to be looking down her nose, and if Nynaeve for once was managing to keep her face calm, she seemed to be trying to climb her own braid.
"If it pleases the light, I will speak with both of you," Malin Din Toral said, looking from Avienda to Birgitta. "But I think I must hear your story first."
Birgitta began to look alarmed as the woman sat down across from her.
"Which means I can speak first with you, if it pleases the light," Doriel Din Iron told Avienda. "I have read of the Aiel. If it pleases you, tell me, if an Aiel woman must kill a man every day, how are there any men left among you?"
Avienda did her best not to stare.
How could the woman believe such nonsense?
"When did you live among us?" Malin Din Toral said over her teacup at the near end of the table. Birgitta was leaning away from her as though she wanted to climb over the back of the chair. At the far end of the table, Nesta Din Rhea's voice rose for a moment.
"Came to me, not I to you. That sets the basis for our bargain, even if you are Aes Sedai."
Slipping into the room, Barak paused between Avienda and Birgitta.
"It seems your shore boat departed as soon as you came below, but have no worry. Windrunner has boats to put you on the shore."
Walking on down the cabin, he took a chair below Elaine and Nynaeve and joined right in. When they looked at whichever was speaking, the other could observe them unnoticed. They had lost an advantage, one they needed.
"Of course the bargain is on our terms," he said in tones of disbelief that it could be otherwise, while the shipmistress studied Elaine and Nynaeve as a woman might two goats she meant to skin for a feast.
Barak's smile was almost fatherly.
"Who asks must, of course, pay highest."
"But you must have lived among us to know those ancient oaths," Malindin Toral insisted. "Are you well, Avienda?" Dorildin Iron asked. "Even here the motion of a ship sometimes affects shore folk. No, and my questions do not offend? Then tell me, do Aiel women truly tie a man down before you... I mean, when you and he... when you..."
Cheeks reddened, she broke off with a weak smile.
"Are many Aiel women as strong in the One Power as you?"
It was not the Windfinder's foolish fumbling about that had made the blood drain from Avienda's face, or that Birgitta appeared ready to run once she could manage to unlatch the chair arm again, or even that Nynaeve and Elaine were apparently discovering they were two bright-eyed girls at a fair in the hands of well-seasoned traders. They would all blame her, and rightly. She was the one who had said if they could not take the Turangrial back to Egwene and the other Aes Sedai once found, why not secure these sea-folk women they spoke of? Time could not be wasted, waiting for Egwene Alvir to say they could return. They would blame her, and she would meet her toe, but she was remembering the boats she had seen on the deck, stacked upside down atop one another. Boats without any shelter on board. They would blame her, but whatever debt she owed, she was going to repay a thousandfold in shame by the time she was taken across 7 or 8 miles of water in an open boat.
"Do you have a bucket?" she asked the Windfinder faintly.